Afternoon, I'd like to call the House Transportation Committee to order. Today is Thursday, March 14th, 2024. We are in room 124, the Barnes Committee Room at the Alaska State Capitol. Let the record reflect that the time is 1:33 PM. Today, we have present Representative Vance, Representative Mina, myself, Chair McCabe. Representative Sumner is online, and I expect the others will trickle in as they finish their lunch after our extended floor session. First, let me apologize to those that were online at 1:00. I know there are some folks waiting for public testimony. Our floor session went a little bit long this morning, and so we are just getting started. I know it's a half hour late. We'll try to get through everything that we can. The staff that's assisting us today, Linda Jensen with House Records, Susan Quigley with the LIO, our loyal staff members, and Angela Steffel, my committee aide. Thank you, ladies, for your support today. If everyone could please silence their cell phones, that would be great. Today, we have quite a bit of work in front of us. First, we'll hear from Mr. Jackson Fox and Bryce Ward from the Fairbanks MPO on called FAST, on their vision, mission, goals, and how they collaborate with DOT. I know that's been a big subject for many people in Alaska based on the STIP and all the news reports and everything, so I thought it was important that we provide some transparency to Alaskans, and this is a way to do it, and I really appreciate the Fairbanks FAST folks, Mr. Fox and Mr. Ward, for stepping up to give us their idea of or how they actually work together. Then we'll take up amendments on HB 122 and take public testimony on HB 122 and 386. And for those of you online to give public testimony, I am not sure how fast we will get to you, so it's likely to be at least an hour, maybe an hour and 15 minutes, so it won't leave us much time for public testimony. And again, I apologize. With that, first up is Mr. Jackson Fox and Mr. Bryce Ward on behalf of FAST, the Fairbanks MPO. Joseph Kemp is also here from DOT, Northern Region Director. They are all on Teams. And we also have some other DOT folks in the room that we can maybe call on if we're desperate for a lifeline. We've asked them to discuss their vision, goals, and how they collaborate with the DOT regarding planning, and I'm sure questions will come up about the STIP. The MPOs came into the limelight with a rejection of that STIP, and I feel it's very important to shine a light on the work these relatively new planning organizations do. People are asking about what they do, how they work, so hopefully we'll get a little insight today. I did ask all of the MPOs to come speak with us. The Matsu MPO is not fully organized yet, so I deferred to Anchorage and Fairbanks for their knowledge to educate us. Fairbanks is the only one who has agreed so far. So with that, let's get going. Mr. Fox and Mr. Ward, please put your names on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you. This is Jackson Fox, the Executive Director of FAST Planning up in Fairbanks. And I'm Mayor Bryce Ward of the Fairbanks Registrar Borough. I'm the Policy Committee Chair. All right, so I do have a presentation for the committee here today. It is 24 slides long. I do know that time is limited, so I'll try to work through these as quickly as I can. But can we go to the second slide in the presentation, the overview? So today, I'm going to explain to you all what a Metropolitan Planning Organization is, who we are, what we do. I'm going to share with you our planning area boundaries, so the area that we work within. And then share with you all our policy board and committee structure, so the people that we work with, and share with you all the various state seats that we have on the board, as well as all of our other committees. And then give you an introduction to our required transportation plans for the boundary that we serve, as well as some of the supplemental planning efforts that we engage in across various users of our transportation network. So let's go to the next slide. So metropolitan planning organizations, this is something that's done across the United States. It is federally mandated to exist for every urbanized area across the United States. The definition of an urbanized area by the U.S. Census Bureau is basically a conglomeration of census blocks that is 50,000 or more more people in a densely settled area. So in the state of Alaska, we have Anchorage, of course, our largest urbanized area, Fairbanks is the second largest urbanized area, and Mat-Su was recently designated with the 2020 census as an urbanized area. So at this point, we have three MPOs, or Metropolitan Planning Organizations, in the state of Alaska. But for reference, across the United States, there's just over 400 organizations like ours. Again, we're federally mandated to exist. That does come with federal funding to do our transportation planning work, as well as projects within our boundary. But really, the purpose of our work is to carry out the transportation planning process underneath federal regulations to develop the long and short range transportation plans for the area in which we serve. And underneath that process, we empower our local governments to engage in the decision making on how on what projects move forward, how federal highway dollars and federal transit administration dollars are spent within our boundary. And we provide our local governments that opportunity through our board and committee structure. Throughout all of our work, we continually engage with the public to participate in that process. All right, next slide.
Thanks, Mr. Fox. If I could stop you there for just a second, we've been joined by Representative Johnson and Representative Stutes at 1:35. So go ahead and continue. I appreciate it. I'll have a question on this slide as well.
Okay, thank you. So on the next slide there, our MPO, and all three MPOs in the state, operate underneath an intergovernmental operating agreement. So this is something that you can find on our website. This agreement is required by federal regulation to exist, and it really outlines the process and the structure on how we as an MPO and all the local governments that we serve coordinate and collaborate with our state Department of Transportation, which is in responsible charge of delivering the projects that we see in our area. On the next slide.
Can we stop there for just a second, Mr. Fox? So what I'm curious of, and what I think many Alaskans are curious of, is who you actually work for. That came up. I actually struggled with it, finding out who exactly you work for, if you work for the DOT, if you work for the mayor's office, if you work for the borough mayor's office. And my discovery was, and I think this is true, please correct me if I'm wrong, is that you actually also work for the governor under this MOU. Similar to what the DOT does, the governor signed this MOU, and Mayor Ward and Mayor Pruse also signed the MOU. So would that be a correct statement?
May I elaborate on our organization
Absolutely.
Type? So, and this is going to be in a couple slides, but I can cover this now. So we are an independent entity. We operate as a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. As staff, though, of the MPO, we report directly to our policy board. So, and I'm going to share with you here soon in the presentation the makeup of our policy board, but our organization and our staff works for the local governments as well as the state, and that is also outlined in that intergovernmental operating agreement.
Perfect. On we go. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. So you should be seeing on your screen right now a map of our planning area boundary. It is kind of an odd-shaped boundary, but again, it relates back to the census and what is considered urbanized versus rural in our area. As you can see within our boundary, we have both city limits for Fairbanks and North Pole included entirely within our boundary. We also have the University of Alaska Fairbanks campus and just a small portion of the borough. You can see a figure on the bottom there in red that shows the Fairbanks and Scarborough borough boundary. And we are just that small donut hole in the middle of that, again, which is the urban core. Also located within our current boundary is Fort Wainwright, the military base. Though for Fort Wainwright, we do not do any planning or transportation planning on behalf of Fort Wainwright, but we do assist with transportation planning on the fringes of their base with regard to entrances and exits there. But as you can see here, we're serving both cities, a portion of the borough, as well as the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And then next slide. So for our office, as I stated previously, we are an independent entity. We operate as a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. We do have a small group of staff. There's just four of us here that are employed by the MPO. So you have myself, the director. We have two full-time transportation planners, and then we have one part-time administrative assistant. And we receive federal planning funds to operate our office and pay our staff salaries. In addition to that, we do share some of our planning funds with our partner agencies, in particular the the Alaska DOT planner that is assigned to our NPO, as well as the transportation planner that's at the borough. Our contribution to those two staff positions at the borough and the state is roughly equivalent to about half of their salaries. So it's a grant that we provide to the two of them so that those staff members, for at least half their time, are dedicated to collaborating with us. Next slide.
Thanks, Mr. Fox. Representative Stutz has a question.
Could you tell me who your DOT planner is?
Our DOT planner up in Fairbanks is Randy Bailey.
Thank you very kindly. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, no other questions? Go ahead, sir.
Okay, so I'm going to run through our policy board and committee structure. I just want to make note that, you know, again, ultimately, we as staff in our committees do report to a policy board. That policy board is supported by a variety of advisory committees. The primary advisory committee to the policy board is our technical committee. But we also have some additional committees that focus on specific user groups of our network, and I'll cover those here in a few slides. But just wanted to make note that all of these committees meet generally on a monthly basis. All of our meetings are open to the public for the public to listen in, participate, and provide input on all the topics that we cover. And then last year, we had 47 open public meetings, primarily of which was these committee meetings. All right, next slide.
Mr. Fox, so I have a question on this one. So if you, as the executive director, were to send a communication to the Federal Highway Administration or the DOT or the state or some other entity, would that go through the policy board for approval first, or does that come directly from you?
So all formal communications in the form of letters go through our technical committee and policy board. And our policy board has to approve the content of those letters before my signature is applied.
Thank you. I looked for any communications from you that I might have available as the House Transportation Committee chair, and we really didn't have any. So is there any way to get copies of those last communications from you and from your policy board, say in the last 12 months, specifically dealing with the STIP?
Yes, we can provide that.
That would be awesome. I appreciate that. Okay, on we go.
Okay, so on the next slide, you should see it says policy board at the top. So for our policy board, again, this is the decision-making body for our NPO. It also operates as the board of directors for our 501c3 nonprofit corporation. As you can see here on the screen, we have 7 seats. There are 5 local government seats and 2 state seats, and that includes all 3 of our local mayors for the 2 cities and the borough, as well as we have an additional seat for a Fairbanks City Council member, as well as an additional seat for a borough assembly member. The 2 states are filled by our Alaska DOT Northern Region Director and the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation Air Quality Division Director, considering our air quality issues up in Fairbanks and how that correlates to our transportation funding. And I'll talk about that a little bit later in the presentation. On the next slide, we have our technical committee, which is, again, the primary advisory body to our policy board. So they advance recommendations to our policy board for decision-making. Currently, we have 18 seats on that committee, of which, as you can see on the screen here, we have 3 seats for city representatives, 4 seats for borough representatives, 6 seats for state representatives, 2 military seats, and then singular seats for the railroad tribal organizations, as well as a freight representative on this technical committee. In general, for the technical committee, these are staff members at each of those local and state governments, as well as the federal government, and they're generally the department heads, within those organizational units that deal with transportation issues.
Thanks. Could you do me a favor and flesh out the freight representative and who that actually is and what that means? Is that just a member of the general public?
So the freight representative is a representative from a local freight hauling company. Currently, I believe it's called ALS Transportation. His name is Justin Burgess that serves on our committee. So it's a local freight transportation provider at large, whoever might be interested in serving in that seat.
Thank you.
Okay, next slide. So as I mentioned previously, we do have some other committees which provide advice and recommendations to our technical committee that eventually works its way up to our policy board. The three primary committees that we have that are kind of off on the side is our Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee, which are really advocates for the needs for bicyclists and pedestrians on our transportation network. We also have a Project Enhancement Committee that provides input on the design of our road improvement projects. And then we also have a Seasonal Mobility Task Force, which is a group of all of our area maintenance managers across our local in state governments. We meet with them about quarterly to share information with each other about their operations at their respective departments. Also, this group and the Seasonal Mobility Task Force, they assist us with providing an annual winter maintenance forum event for the public. We typically do that in the fall to share with the public what will or won't happen with respect to snow removal during the upcoming winter, considering staff challenges, any new equipment that they've purchased, and any other operational or budgetary concerns that they have. And for all three of these committees that you see on the screen, the state DOT has seats that they can appoint at large to each one of these committees, many of which are served by DOT staff members.
Thank you. And so I have a question on this one. Where, which committee would be handling, I'm in receipt of a letter that you sent to the DOT that has a great number of comments on projects way outside of Fairbanks, the Marine Highway System, the Cooper Bypass, Cooper Landing Bypass, a number of comments on those projects. So I'm wondering which committee would be dealing with those particular projects.
So the letter that you're referencing went through our technical committee and our policy board, but not the three of the committees that you see on the screen. So just the primary advisory body, the technical committee, and then to the policy board for approval.
So thank you. Is that normal for you to for the Fairbanks FAST, which you gave us a pretty good map of your sort of area or your area of operations. Is that normal for you to be commenting on statewide projects?
Yes, traditionally. So our MPO has been in existence for about 20 years. And so each time a STIP is developed and advertised for public input, we have throughout that 20-year span provided comments statewide on projects throughout the state.
Okay, and so the reason I'm asking in this particular spot is I'm wondering which part of your committee or technical committee has the expertise or the area knowledge to be able to comment on those, or is it strictly the money aspect of it that concerns FAST?
I believe Mayor Ward would like to chime in, if that's allowed.
Sure.
Yeah, Mayor Ward for the record. So I've been involved with FAST planning for about 10 years, and it's through every STIP development, it's been regular for us to look at statewide allocations for transportation funding throughout all regions of the state and look at them in comparison to the projects that we're prioritizing and working on in our community. So it's been a regular occurrence for us to vet that through the policy board and weigh in on where funding is being spent throughout the state. Of course, you know, we're very interested in seeing as many of those transportation dollars come to the interior. As well as the other MPOs are very interested in making sure that the projects that we prioritize for our community are getting the necessary funding.
Thanks. I appreciate that. And I agree with everything you said that everybody in the state should be able to benefit from the STIP, but the Kenai Peninsula has no MPO and no way to comment on the Fairbanks projects. And likewise, until recently, the Mat-Su has not had an MPO and no way to comment other than individually on the projects that went to Fairbanks or went to Anchorage through their MPOs. So I can understand the level of a frustration from many Alaskans, wondering why Fairbanks feels the need to comment on the Cooper Bypass, Cooper Landing Bypass, or the Alaska Marine Highway and that sort of stuff. Having said that, I think Representative Stutes has a question.
I think you've covered it pretty well, Mr. Chair. Thank
okay.
You.
Thanks. On we go.
Okay. Moving on to the next slide. I'm now going to dive into our required transportation plans. As I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, our primary function is to carry out the transportation planning process And when I say the transportation planning process, what I'm generally referring to is the long and short range transportation plans for our projects within our boundary. And I may use these acronyms. MTP is the first one, our Metropolitan Transportation Plan. That's our 20-year look at the list of projects for our transportation network that we foresee that we need to construct, based on the age of our facilities and increasing capacities to follow along with population growth and new land uses and development in our area. So this is a 20-year outlook. And again, we call it our MTP. And then secondarily, we produce a four-year short-range funding plan, which, similar to the STIP, is just called the TIP. So it's just the S that's dropped off that. So we have a local TIP for our area, which shows down to the dollar amount how we're spending the federal highway dollars in our area and on which projects. And it also provides financial details on, how much money we're spending on design and right-of-way utilities and construction and what years that those investments will occur. So next slide. I'm just going to show you a couple of graphics from our long range plan or MTP. The one on the screen there, this shows you in a singular figure all of the transportation projects over the next 20 years that we intend to construct. Of course, this is subject to change. We do have to update this plan every 4 years. But to get to a map like this in the project list, it is a very comprehensive analysis on the transportation needs for the network, again, in consideration of new development, population growth, aging facilities, pavement, bridge conditions, et cetera. And it does, to the best of our ability, identify the projects that we want to move forward with in our boundary across, we consider when we look at the transportation system, we're not, in this plan, we're not teasing out the separate entities that are responsible for maintenance of those facilities. So this does include DOT roadways, city streets, rural road service area roads, any road work up on the UAF campus, et cetera. So it's all inclusive. And our technical committee is the primary working group that works on this plan with our consulting team. And again, the technical committee has 6 state seats that provide input into these project lists. On the next slide, it shows you what those project lists look like. On this slide here, you'll see our list of short-range projects, so projects that we intend to pursue designing and constructing over the next 4 to 5 years. As you can see, there's kind of the table here split out between fast-planning projects and non-fast-planning projects. What that means is, on the fast-planning project side, this is the small sub-allocation of federal money to our area for local road improvements. We're working with about $12 million per year. For those fast planning projects. Again, those are just our local projects. And then the non-fast planning projects is all the other projects that we have in our transportation network. So it's the DOT highway projects. It's our railroad projects in our boundary, as well as our major transit projects. So it includes all those other entities and all those other facility types in the non-fast planning project list.
Thanks. This is an awesome list. Representative Stutz has a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't mean to regress here, but I guess I will just a little bit, because when you started with this, and this is an incredible list that you have done your short-range plan on and your plans, but when you started out with this, you said, we're looking at projects within our boundary. So can you once again help me understand why you're commenting on projects that aren't within your boundary? I guess I didn't quite understand why that is. Thank you.
We had a little bit of an audio difficulty here, but I think I understood your question to be that as we go through these planning efforts, we're identifying projects within our boundary. But you had stated that, like in our comment letter from September, we were commenting on projects outside of our boundary. Is that correct?
That's correct. Thank you.
Okay. And I think Mayor Ward had responded to some of that. But just to give you, I guess, an example, because the Cooper Landing bypass came up. So looking at a lot of the projects down on the Kenai Peninsula, when you total them up for over the next 4 years, it's about $1 billion investment. And then in the STIP available to the state is only about $3 billion over the course of that time period. And we have a lot of project needs in our area. And I know that that Mat-Su has a lot of product needs as well. Is it because it's the fastest growing, you know, population center in our state? And so really what our comment related to on projects outside of our boundaries, say down on the Kenai Peninsula, was that there might be a more equitable share of those funds so that we can get, you know, more of our projects done in Fairbanks. And it's a comment also supporting Mat-Su, that we recognize that they have a lot of transportation needs there. And, you know, how do we equitably distribute the federal funding that comes into the state to all communities in need?
Thanks, Mr. Fox. And would it surprise you to know that Fairbanks in the last 13 years has got six times more money than any other area in the state in the last 12, 13 years? Six times. So, you guys are very effective.
Yes, I am. I'm aware that, yeah, our Northern Region office has done very well at the table in securing federal transportation dollars for our area.
Thanks. Representative Stutz has a follow-up.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate this. And I appreciate your hard work in getting all that money, but it alarms me a little bit to hear you say it sounds like it's more about how much money you can get as opposed to the safety of Alaskans on some of these projects. And that's really rather concerning to me. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, on we go.
All right, on the next slide, this shows you just a very basic flow chart for basically how as we go through this transportation planning process, how this really starts out with needs that are identified for the transportation network. So then from those needs, project ideas are generated. And then, you know, looking at all those different project ideas, those projects are evaluated and screened. And then prioritized. And then, you know, based on the amount of funding that we can expect to be available to our area, using that prioritized list of projects, funding is then programmed for those projects generally in priority order with the funding that we have available to us, which falls into our TIP. So the bottom line here is that the short range list of projects from our long range plan are then advanced into our TIP to receive actual funding. And on the next slide.
So, Mr. Fox, do you have a hard stop at 2, or can we finish the slide deck? Or because if you do, I'd like to really get to the EPA function part of your slide, because I think it's important for everyone to understand the issues that you have up there.
And speaking with Mayor Ward here, we do have some additional time, and we can continue.
Awesome. Thanks. On we go.
Okay, so you should be seeing a slide right now showing the TIP versus the STIP. They're very similar documents. They're basically spreadsheets that, again, show, you know, over a period of 4 or 5 years how our federal transportation dollars are being spent within our boundary and, you know, what the timeline is of those projects. So our TIP is exclusive to the projects in our boundary, and the STIP, of course, is the list of projects that is statewide. And then on the next page, you know, when we look at our construction program each summer, our TIP will show all of the projects that will occur in our boundary. So it's not just our local MPO projects with the $12 million per year that we get, but it's also the DOT highway projects, the rail projects, and the transit projects that are within our boundary. So it shows the total investment in our area across all sectors. And then next slide. And then just to share with you kind of the relationship between our long-range plan, or MTP, the TIP, and the STIP, as I had indicated there, we developed that 20-year long-range transportation plan, or MTP, and once we get to that list of short-range projects that we would like to pursue funding for over the next 4 or 5 years, that short-range list gets put into our four-year funding plan, or our TIP, and then that TIP is incorporated into the STIP by reference without change. Then next slide.
Thanks. Representative Mina has a question.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, just on the relationship between the MTP, TIP, and STIP, how does that process usually work in past years with FAST planning on integrating your MPO's comments to the STIP?
Um, Can you clarify the question for me? Are we referring to the comment letter into the STIP, or are you referring to the TIP being incorporated into the STIP?
Through the chair, for clarification, in previous STIPs, how does your MPO engage with the process of developing a STIP?
So traditionally, and this was the same case for this go-around here, as the draft STIP is developed, generally we have not had a seat at the table to participate in the development of the STIP. We see the draft STIP when it is published for public comment, and then we make our comment on the STIP at that time.
Thank you.
Thanks. So, Mr. Fox, I do have a question on that, as long as we're just right here talking about the STIP. I'm wondering if you or did you or anybody else on the policy board ever tell the media that the STIP had been rejected by the Federal Highway Administration at any time before it was submitted in January of this year, 2024?
Yes, and I'm referring to the original STIP that expired on September 30th and for which a six-month extension was needed.
Okay. I suspect there's a little bit of a communication issue with that. I'm also wondering about the railroad. So the railroad, whenever I talk to Senator Sullivan, our senator, about the railroad, he says, make sure you get it in the STIP. Looking at your list of projects, I don't see any Alaska Railroad stuff in the STIP, and I do know that they haven't built any rail or much rail in quite a while. So has the MPO or the FAST ever done any kind of rail? Have you ever recommended it? I know you have a seat on one of your advisory boards that has the railroad, so I'm wondering where and how that plays into the Alaska Railroad.
So for our MTP and our TIP, we are required to list all the railroad projects that are within our boundary. In our TIP, we not only list the projects that will occur in our boundary, but also all the federal Transit Administration funds and Federal Railroad Administration funds that the railroad uses for their operations for their lines of track that are within our boundary. So we do have some of those. We have those projects in informational tables in the TIP. But I also want to make note that we also did a planning effort on behalf of DOT and the railroad. It was called a road rail crossing reduction plan to try to eliminate some of the conflicts with rail crossings in our area, most of which was, say dead-ending roads, so there was fewer crossings, as well as providing safety improvements at existing crossings. So we did that in collaboration with railroad staff and DOT staff.
Thanks. That's helpful.
Okay, next slide. So just to share with you some of our other required plans, and I'll talk to you a little bit about some of our supplemental plans. But other required plans, as you can see here on the screen, we do have a unified planning work program. This is basically a two-year staff plan on what we'll be working on internally over the next 2 years. We are also responsible for the regional air quality emissions analysis for the PM2.5 non-attainment area, as well as we have a public participation plan and Title VI plan, which outlines how we engage with the public as we carry out the transportation planning process across all of our plans.
Thanks. So this kind of gets to one of the things that I wanted to highlight for the public that's watching, because many of the people in the public don't understand, and I'm sure it frustrates you up there, especially being a MPO, that the majority of the PM2.5 and the pollution up there, besides being caused by an inversion, comes from wood stoves or oil boilers, not from cars. And yet there's a possibility of you, Fairbanks, the MPO up there, being penalized because of that. So I know you're way smarter on that than I am, so maybe you could just spend a couple minutes highlighting that sort of interplay between the EPA and the highway funds.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, let's go to the next slide, because that's my air quality slide for the committee. But I do want to, open with, we have had letters that came out through our policy board to the EPA about some of our frustration with tying our air quality issue to our federal transportation dollars. You know, the Clean Air Act was written, you know, over 50 years ago. And at that time, emissions from vehicles were really the primary air pollution problem. And at that time, when the Clean Air Act was written, the penalty was that if you don't clean up your air, we're going to withhold your federal transportation funds, you know, from your area. But as we know up here at Fairbanks, the primary emission source or problem is wood smoke from wood stoves. So when we get into a penalty phase, we're not cleaning up our air on the schedule that the EPA expects us to. They're still using those old penalties that are 50 years old and focusing on our transportation dollars, which I think I've stated in many board meetings as well as to the media, you know, the punishment here doesn't fit the crime for what is occurring. And we are starting to experience some of that penalty right now. Effective as of January 4th, we are in a conformity freeze on our local transportation plans. And this is kind of the first step that takes place in the penalty phase before federal highway dollars are actually withheld from our area. And this relates to the partial disapproval of the state air quality plan for the PM2.5 non-attainment area. So during a conformity freeze, our local transportation plans, both long and short range plans, are kind of frozen in time. We can continue to execute those projects, but we can't really move them around. We can't add any new projects, and we can't add any new funding to the projects that we have on the books. And so our hands are really tied right now to deliver our program, because the nature of a transportation project is that, you know, schedules can slip, cost estimates come in higher than, you know, what we may have estimated for those, but we don't necessarily have available to us additional money to provide for those projects. So again, we can continue moving forward over the next 2 years with executing our funding plan and spend those funds, but we can't really deviate from that plan. But at this time, federal highway funds are not being withheld from our area over this. But 2 years from now, if the deficiencies in the state air quality plan are not corrected, then at that time, we may be in a highway sanction situation where federal dollars are actually withheld from our area.
Thank you. That was really, really a good explanation there. Many people have heard of this. And, of course, the MATSU had some issues with this not too long ago with our air quality for one reason or another. So we delved into it a little bit. But if I can help you, if we can help you with the resolution or something from the legislature to the EPA or the federal government, we're happy to help you try to solve that problem. It's always seemed to me like flushing your toilet and having the front porch light come on. They're just so wildly disparate. The penalty that you're getting for the what's actually causing the pollution up there. So just let us know how we can help you, and I'm sure we're all happy to do that. Okay, on we go.
I appreciate that. I did want to make one note on that comment. Potentially coming up, you know, within just underneath the 2 year mark, we might be trying to pursue a protective finding so that our federal highway dollars are preserved and not withheld from us. So when the time comes, we will reach out.
Thank you.
All right. On the next slide, I'm just sharing with you some of our supplemental planning efforts. These are not required plans for our MPO, but we do try to spend some of our time focusing on, you know, particular user groups of our transportation network. So back in 2019, we developed a freight mobility plan for our transportation network. The next one there, a road rail crossing reduction plan, which I previously mentioned. We also provided some assistance to the Fairbanks North Star Borough on a road service area expansion plan. And then we also have a bicycle and pedestrian plan, which is our non-motorized plan, looking at the needs of bicyclists and pedestrians throughout our network. And then the next slide, some supplemental plans that we're working on right now. We are, again, partnering with Fairbanks North Star Borough to update their transit plan for both their fixed route system and their van train service, as well as helping out many of our senior centers throughout our community with a coordinated human services transportation plan update, which really helps get all of the smaller transportation service providers, primarily for elderly and disabled folks, to get you know, smaller vehicle service to and from their appointments, groceries, et cetera. And that's an important plan because once that's in place, it provides opportunity for our senior centers and other service providers to apply for grants using that plan. And then right now we're also working on a local electric vehicle infrastructure deployment plan. So we're looking at the feasibility of whether or not it makes sense for our community to install electric vehicle charging stations throughout Fairbanks and North Pole. And that effort will be kicking off next week. Also, we're partnering with our local school district on doing high school campus access and circulation plans, looking at all the high school facilities in our boundary, and looking at student traffic versus parent pickup and drop off traffic and bus traffic at their campuses to help provide some recommendations and a list of improvement projects that might help alleviate some of the congestion and conflicts with circulation in those campuses. The next slide. Also, a new initiative for us. We are looking at kind of expanding our transportation planning services to the rural communities that are outside of our boundary. We did enter into a cooperative agreement with the State of Alaska DOT to be a pilot regional transportation planning organization. So like many of the planning activities that I just described, we'd like to expand those planning activities to 16 rural communities outside of our boundary, to the west of us, north of us, and south, and east of us. And so this is a new partnership with DOT. I believe there's three regional transportation planning organizations that have been stood up so far, but this year here in 2024, we're going to try to move this forward. This does not come with any money for projects. It's really just an effort by our MPO to assist these rural communities with developing, a list of projects for which they can potentially pursue funding in the STIF for those. And then the next slide. We also have a variety of, different initiatives and projects that we do for the community. This is one that was very popular all across the community with our public. We developed an interactive map online where folks could zoom into a map, find the road that it might be a road that they live on, or maybe it's a road in town that they have concerns with regard to maintenance, whether it's a pothole or there's a snow berm or whatnot. And you can literally click on any road and it shares with you who the maintenance authority is and gives you a phone number, email, and a person's name of who to contact to get that issue addressed on the maintenance side. So this has been popular with our maintenance service providers, the community, and actually very popular with local realtors trying to understand which roads are maintained and by who, so they can let their clients know. And then my next slide is here, just kind of closing, and a thank you for your time today, but I'd like to turn it over to Mayor Ward for some additional comments, and again, we're happy to answer questions.
Yes, thank you. For the record, Mayor Bryce Ward. So NPOs, it's great to be able to address the committee and talk about what NPOs are. Really, the NPO is a great partnership between the state of Alaska and the local community to be able to provide additional fidelity into the local planning that we have in our local area. One of the criticisms that we've heard across the state, whether it be in my mayor capacity or as a member of the NPO, is that there's often frustration between bridging the gap between a regular member of the public or a government agency and the DOT. And the NPO is really the opportunity for the community to come together and take the initiative to do some of these planning efforts, which really benefit DOT. They provide a very clear-cut path on prioritized projects and the need for those projects, and then also the support that the community has. So we've obviously, as you mentioned, Mr. Chair, benefited from this at the local level here in the interior. We are very excited about the RPO model, being able to spread this to other areas across the state, where local communities, agencies can come together and work with DOT, partner with DOT to do those local transportation efforts to make sure that funding that does come to the community that's available, whether it be through federal highways or through other federal programs. For us, we benefit from air quality programs as well, that those are spent in a way that the community sees the need and benefit, and that we're able to do that collaboratively with the DOT. So from a community perspective, I've served as the borough mayor. I've also served as the city mayor. Our local MPO has been incredibly vital to ensuring that local maintenance projects are able to happen, repaving of streets that would have never been able to be paid for through local tax dollars. It's that partnership with the MPO and with DOT where we're able to get those things done. Rehabilitation of sidewalks, paving of streets, connecting of roads that are in need of some sort of infrastructure development. There's lots of benefit that the MPO can offer. And just to speak of the RPO model, as the state expands this in partnership with the commissioner, who I'll also add was a previous chair for our MPO here, Mr. Anderson, there's just lots of opportunities. And we're very excited about being able to share that with the state and work collaboratively to development of these planning efforts and ensure the funding goes to where it needs to across the state of Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and I really, really appreciate you two showing up and giving us an overview. I know that there's been a bit of contention based on some of my comments previously, and I think it frustrates all of us when an instrument or a group such as the MPO that's supposed to be focused on roads and building roads and maintaining roads and fixing bridges gets involved in politics, which is sort of where we saw some of the things going, especially politics that are sort of outside the boundaries. So many Alaskans are concerned about that, and I appreciate you spending so much time with us. I do have one final question. You have a 501c3, and there's supposed to be you have a mission for the 501c3, and one of the questions that we had is, what is your mission statement on the 501c3, and how does that relate to influencing or trying to influence projects outside of your boundaries?
So for our 501c3, I don't have it in front of me here, but in general, the mission statement for the 501c3 is to carry out the transportation planning process, and then we have a list of the Code of Federal Regulation citations for what that means to carry out the transportation planning process. But to do that on behalf of our local governments, as well as the state, you know, all of the local governments that have a stake in our transportation network here locally. So it's not your typical mission statement, because we are federally mandated to exist, and we have a federal function that we're carrying out on behalf of our local governments. So our mission statement is in line with that. But yeah, you are correct. As a 501c3, we cannot lobby for financial gain.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Mina has a question.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, I do have one question just on the line of what jurisdiction and areas can an MPO comment on or ought comment on related to the STIP. Do other MPOs and other states generally comment on just their area, or do they also comment on other projects?
I don't believe I can speak to that. I've not seen other examples of comment letters from other MPOs and other states. I would imagine that they would comment on projects statewide, but I cannot say that I've seen a comment letter on a STIP from another MPO.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, gentlemen, thank you so much, and I really mean that from the bottom of my heart. That's been helpful, and we can, the Alaskans that watch this will have a better understanding of how an MPO works. I know that there have been some questions, especially in the MATSU with the new MPO coming on. People are a little worried about it, so. Thank you so much, and I appreciate it, and I really appreciate you staying an extra 20 minutes. That's awesome. Thank you.
Very welcome.
So, second item on today's agenda is HB 122. Representative Tomaszewski and Zach Young, if you could come to the table and present HB 122, please. I also see that Ms. Clemens and it doesn't quite look like Bill O'Leary, but... There are some Alaska Railroad folks here. Preston Carnahan from Royal Caribbean are here, but no Mr. O'Leary. That's okay. Online we have Michelle Maddox, Chief Financial Officer, Alaska Railroad. Clark Hopp, Chief Operating Officer, Alaska Railroad. And Brian Lindemood, Vice President and Chief Engineer of Alaska Railroad. So, today we'll take up amendments and hear public testimony on HB 122. So take it away, Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Chair McCabe and the rest of the Transportation Committee. We're here just to present HB 122 again. And with me, I have my staff, Zach Young, who's going to go through HB 122. And then, you know, whatever the chair pleases, we'll be happy to answer questions or take up amendments as you desire.
Thank you. Mr. Young.
For the record, Zach Young, staffer, Representative Frank Tomaszewski. Thank you, Chair McCabe and members of the committee. We have before you HB 122, Act relating to Railroad Corporation financing. As many of you are aware from a previous presentation, this would be a bonding authorization for the railroad to be able to install a new passenger terminal and dock facility in the Port of Seward. This is extremely necessary as aging and weather has significantly deteriorated the current dock to a point where significant investments just to have the current season's operations continue are required. That aging is a increasingly pressing matter as time goes on. All that being said, we have five amendments that it looks like the committee is looking at offering. None of them are particularly problematic, but I'll just briefly describe the feelings of the railroad.
Why don't we move the amendments first, talk about them individually, and then Ms. Clemens or you can come up and tell us that you have no objection or that you hate it or whatever. So thanks. So today we will take up amendments and hear public testimony on HB 122. So I do have some amendments in front of me. Looks like, as Mr. Young said, we have five of them. And I think the first one belongs to you.
Yes, thank you, Chairman McCabe. This is Representative McKay, and I move Amendment 1.
And I'll object for discussion purposes, so.
Okay, I will describe Amendment 1, labeled A.1, would reduce the maximum principal amount of revenue bonds the Alaska Railroad Corporation can issue for the replacement of their passenger dock and terminal facility in Seward, Alaska, from $150 million to $135 million. The reduction of $15 million comes at the request of the Alaska Railroad after a refined project design resulted in a decreased cost estimate for this project.
Any other discussion? No, so this is the folks that need the bonding authority asking to reduce it. How unique is that, right?
Sounds like a friendly amendment to me.
So with that, I will remove my objection. Any further objections? Okay, amendment number 1 passes. All right. And I think the second amendment is, did I miss one?
I have amendment number 4, but
let's take a brief of these. Back on the record. So the next amendment is my amendment, and it's authorizing the Alaska, or I'm sorry, I will move amendment 2.
Object.
Okay, perfect.
For purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Representative Stutz. So this amendment is authorizing the Alaska Railroad Corporation to issue new revenue bonds to finance the completion of Port McKenzie Rail Extension in Port McKenzie, Alaska. So this is a pretty, I've done this amendment before on the floor, I think 2 years in a row. That's kind of the sum total of it. The amendment is for $58,000 to increase the bonding to $58,000. Wouldn't require... I'm sorry, $58 million. Sorry, I apparently can't read today. So it wouldn't require that the railroad take $58 million. It would just give them the authorization, should they need it, to complete Port McKenzie. And I know they're just dying to do that. So it would give them the authorization to do that. That's it. Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I have a question. Are they anticipating this completion of Port McKenzie in the near future?
Of course we are.
No, the railroad, my friend.
They are with my encouragement.
Yes, I'm sure they are. But there's no current...
There is no current plan. The plan, so Representative McCabe, through myself, I guess. There is no current plan. We're just circling around the financing and how to get it financed and paid for. $58 million would do the phase one that the railroad envisions completing.
Follow up. Mr. Chair, please. Would that bonding require a public vote?
No. Representative Stutz, no.
Thank you.
Yep. Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. To the chair, this is an interesting amendment, and I do support the underlying bill. I'm curious of the railroad's perspective on the amendment, if they have any comment.
Ms. Clemens.
Sure, to the chair. And for the record, my name is Megan Clemens, the External Affairs Director for the Alaska Railroad. And I should mention, Bill O'Leary sends his regrets that he couldn't be here in person today, but he is on the line. So if there's any questions for Mr. O'Leary, he'll be happy to jump in. But to your question, Representative Mina, the railroad is certainly supportive of rail infrastructure, and we are actively pursuing opportunities to build the Port McKenzie Rail Extension. From our perspective, having the bond authorization, should we identify a commercial customer to secure that debt, it would only be expediting that process if we had the authorization in place. So we have no objection to this amendment.
Thank you.
Representative Vance.
Thank you to the chair. In light of the recent amendment or resolution that we passed on the House floor that included both Port McKenzie and the Northern Rail Extension, my question is why you have not included bonding authority for both the Port McKenzie and the Northern Rail Extension at the same time?
Yeah, thanks. So we thought about that. The Northern Rail Extension is north of $1.03 or $1.04 right now. And we felt that is, and frankly, Mr. O'Leary and I discussed this and felt that maybe it was easier and better to take it in small chunks. So the Northern Rail Extension needs more permitting, more EPA, EIS stuff done. Port McKenzie is virtually done as far as the NEPA and EIS. And so this seemed like the logical first step was this $58 million out of the $248 million that it's supposed to cost. That was the thought process. I didn't want to give the railroad $3 billion worth of bonding authority. Who knows where they'd go? Representative Stutz. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you have a follow-up?
Oh,
thank you. A follow-up through the chair to, I apologize, I forget your name, Ms. Railroad.
Ms. Clemens.
Ms. Clemens. So
Ms. Railroad.
With this, if this were to pass, what's the next step with this bonding authority? Because we know that there's already been discussions in looking for a partnership to be able to provide this funding. What would be the next step from the railroad?
I'll take a first crack at this. And as I mentioned, Mr. O'Leary's on the line, so I'll welcome him to jump in. But, I believe our next step would be to continue, trying to identify a commercial customer that would be able to secure the bond debt to enable us to go out and actually issue those bonds to construct the rail line and complete, the first phase of completing the Port McKenzie Rail Extension. So certainly having the bond authorization in place, again, would, only help to expedite those discussions. I believe I'm correct in saying there's been some recent interest from the military with Port McKenzie, if there'd be mining interest that might have some level of interest in, moving goods from the port out over a rail line. This would just be another tool in the toolkit to, help, bump up that timeline. But certainly we would not be in a position to issue bonds without identifying a customer. And again, I'll ask if Mr. O'Leary's on the line, if there's anything he'd like to add to that question.
I think that's a very relevant answer. It shows that it's much more than just about the MATSU, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, to Ms. Clemens, Railroad Clemens, when the railroad asks for bond authority for specific projects, do they usually have funding secured prior to asking for the bond authority? Or how often is it where you used the request to increase that bond authority in order to help secure funding?
You know, that I will have to ask Mr. O'Leary to weigh in on. I can't speak to how common that's been in the past, but he might be able to provide a little bit more context for that.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Leary, did you hear the question?
Mr. Chairman, I did. For the record, my name is Bill O'Leary. I'm the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Railroad. And to Representative Mina's question, it's gone both ways over the years. I would probably say the majority of the time there is a very specific revenue source identified prior to coming to the legislature. There have been in the past some larger bond authorizations provided sometimes at the request of the railroad, sometimes not at the request of the railroad, that have not had the funding source or the revenue source to repay the debt identified.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So, Representative Stutz, you maintain your objection?
I do not maintain my objection.
All of that.
Okay. So, who's calling the roll? Would you call the roll, please?
Representative C. Johnson?
Yes.
Representative McKay?
Yes.
Representative Vance?
Yes.
Representative Stutz?
Yes.
Representative Mina?
No.
Representative Sumner?
No, Sumner.
He's online?
He's gone today.
No, he's online.
He was online.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He's not.
Representative Sumner, can you hear us?
Can you vote?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he can't vote when he's online anyways. Well, he has to be here to sign it, so.
He's not present.
Nope.
And Chair McCabe?
Yes.
So that's 5 yeas, 1 nay.
Okay, so on a vote of 5 yeas and 1 nay, amendment number 2 passes. Okay, amendment number 3, Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number 3.
And I'll object for discussion purposes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to make, before we go too much further, I would like to make a, what sort of
conceptual.
Thank you. Conceptual. God, just went right through me. Conceptual amendment to this amendment, which would say after accommodate Alaska Marine Highway System vessels with side loading. So it would be the vessels that load the vehicles from the side of the marine highway vessel as opposed to the back or the front, which would be essentially the big mainliners.
Okay, so why don't you move that amendment, that conceptual amendment, and I think it's just to add the words with side-loading doors after marine highway system vessels.
Correct.
Okay. So why don't
I would like to move my conceptual amendment.
I'll object.
Okay, object. So
I had a conversation with the people from the railroad, and they didn't necessarily have an issue with this amendment except for it at the dock as it's going to be constructed. It would be difficult for them to have a front-loading or back-loading vessel there. It would not be... they just wouldn't be able to accommodate it. So most of the two mainliners that would most likely be utilizing that dock will have the side-loading vessels. So I spoke to them about this conceptual amendment, and it seemed to satisfy their concern.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know why we would limit our options. If that's all they can bring in, that's what they can bring in. But in the future, it might be that they could use a front loader, a side loader. So, I mean, if we're going to issue the bonding, I think we should not preclude future use. And so I'm kind of torn with this. I understand the concept, but in the future, you know, hopefully it grows and hopefully it gets bigger. And let's, I just hate limiting our options on any of this, because we don't get a lot of bites at these apples.
So
if I could respond to that.
Yeah, sure, Representative Stutz.
We thought about that, but they have the cargo dock there that they are going to be making, rebuilding essentially. The question is when, and we don't really have a timeline on that. And when they rebuild that cargo dock, it will be able to accept the front load, the back load, the side load vessels. In the meantime, by allowing the side load vessels to be at the same dock that the cruise ships use, at least there is accessibility for the marine highway vessels that would be using that dock.
And I suspect that the design change to the dock that would allow a front-loading vessel would be fairly significant right at this point. I have the dock. Right now, the cargo dock only accepts a side loader anyways.
Right.
So they don't accept a front loader. So I agree with Representative Stutz that when we rebuild the cargo dock, which I think the railroad is, it's part of their deal as well, we need to insist that they be able to take a front-loading vessel. But the floating passenger dock right now that they're envisioning for the cruise ships, the design change to do that to accept another, I don't know, what's the Lakati? That's a front-loader, right? Is that 300 feet long? Mm-hmm. So now we're talking about significant design change to be able to accept that.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, and maybe I'm not familiar enough with design, but isn't there a barge ramp? Or am I confusing docks here?
Might be thinking of Port McKenzie.
Maybe so. It's ingrained in my head.
I am so glad.
I recognize that could be a potential problem on a floating dock. So I was just curious as to why we would limit it, and you satisfied that question.
Representative Vance.
Thank you, through the chair. Does this change the bonding request amount in any way?
No, to the chair, Representative Vance, this would not change the scope or price tag of the proposed passenger dock. That floating dock design was already prepared to accommodate a side-loading passenger vessel. And if I may, so the cargo dock, that we have a construction plan in place, and that project is funded through a Marriott grant and matched with ARC internal funds. Because there are federal dollars involved, the timeline has been pushed slightly on that, but we are currently looking at, a 2026, 2027 timeframe. So a little after the passenger dock plan, but still, you know, fairly near in the time horizon. And the plan for that dock would be to be able to accommodate either side-loading or stern-loading marine highway system vessels should the ferry return to Seward. So we would be prepared to accommodate the marine highway after the completion of that cargo dock, which, again, is planned and funded.
Thank you.
Okay, and who had the objection? You maintain your objection, Rep? Okay, any further objections? Okay, without further objection, Amendment 3 passes. So now we have Amendment 4 by Representative McKay.
This is Representative McKay. I move Amendment 4.
Object.
Okay, and we have an objection. Representative McKay.
Okay, Amendment 4, labeled A.4, would allow ADIA to issue bonds in the amount of up to $300 million to finance infrastructure and construction costs of infrastructure necessary to develop critical mineral and rare earth projects located in Alaska. This bonding authority does not appropriate any state or ADIA funds. This amendment simply grants the legislative approval necessary for ADIA to issue bonds to finance economically viable projects. By granting this legislative approval, it will allow ADIA to market its ability to finance critical minerals projects and seek out additional investments from the private sector. Example projects are West Sioux Sitna Access Road, the Nova Mineral Processing Facility, Graphite One Mine, and et cetera. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. So this amendment was brought to us a little bit late, so we're having, this is a conceptual amendment by Representative McKay. And we initially said absolutely not. We don't want to pollute the Alaska Railroad bill with this. However, it is a bond bill. We are putting forth a bill to allow a state agency, the Alaska Railroad, to the authority to bond should they need it. And ADA came to us and said, is it possible that we could get in there without upsetting, you know, the whole railroad thing? ADA talked to the CEO, Mr. O'Leary. He seems fine with that. And the bill sponsor was blindsided by my office, but we managed to smooth some ruffled feathers, and he's okay with it at this point. So do you want the... You want to hear from the railroad, or is that explanation good enough, or do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That explanation was good. I have a real hard time with this. I think it does junk up this bill. I think it makes this bill less likely to go anywhere. I think it's not compatible with this bill. I understand that there's bonding going on, but that's about the only thing they have is that four-letter word, bond. I just don't feel like it's germane to the original bill, so I will be maintaining my objection.
Okay. Representative Vance.
Thank you, through the chair. I have a couple of questions, and my first one is, because I'm trying to learn to maneuver through my documents, but this bill goes to finance next, correct?
Yes, I believe so, yes.
Thank you, and follow-up.
Follow-up.
Could the sponsor of the amendment give us a little bit more details about, you know, once this is bonded, when they want to pursue some of these projects, what kind of process is there with the legislature and with the public on each of the various projects that were mentioned? And I ask this simply because I'm unfamiliar with many of the projects mentioned, and having not been a member of resources and in that circle of conversation on a regular basis, I think it would just help clarify how this bonding is going to be used and kind of the process moving forward.
Well, I believe that I should refer that to Mr. Ruaro of ADIA, who's online, I believe.
Okay, Mr. Raro, just 1 second. I'd like to see if Representative Sumner can hear us. Sumner? Okay. All right, Mr. Raro, you're on Teams, and can you answer Representative Vance's question?
And I apologize, but Executive Director Raro is not available, and we do have Mark Davis, who assisted drafting this. He can speak to Representative Vance's question.
Okay, Mr. Davis.
Hi, my name is Mark Davis, and I'm a counsel with ADA. I know you're not familiar with all the projects we have. Basically, this is a pre-authorization for bonds that were issued by ADA under the auspices of ADA, not revenue bonds. We issue two kinds of bonds, and we have projects all over the state that would deal with critical minerals and potentially rare earth metals. Some have been mentioned, but others would be potentially in southeast Alaska. If we're developing a project and we are ready to go, if we have to go back to the legislature to get bonding approval, if you want to use bonds backed by ADA, then it takes time, and it sometimes means that the deal doesn't go forward. So what we're doing here is asking for pre-authorization for rare earth metals up to the amount, without an amount. But it's also specified that these will be from the revenues of ADA and they are not the debt of the state. That's important to note. And so really this is just legislative authorization to have these bonds available if we need them.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Davis. Representative Stutz has a question for you.
Yes, I do. Thank you. Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Davis, so if this bond authorization is issued, then when you find a project, will you be required to come back to the legislature in order to get authorization for that particular project using these funds?
Representative Stutz, through the chair, no, we would not if it's for these rare earth metals. Now, if we were to come back for revenue for any kind of bond for another purpose, this wouldn't be an authorization. So this is limited to our efforts on the rare earth metals, and it is a pre-approval by the legislature. This has been done before by the legislature. And it doesn't mean that we'd issue the bonds, because any bond issuance has to go through all of our governance to make sure that they track and they make sense. ADA has never issued a bond that has had a financial difficulty, and we will work to maintain that record.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up, but first let me say this. We have 10 minutes left, and I have 35 people online waiting to testify for 386. So what I'm going to do is sincerely apologize to you folks that have had to listen to us for the last hour and 20 minutes or so. And we are going to hold HB 386, which had a public testimony component, until the next meeting, so next week. And I don't want you to have to stay online waiting for public testimony anymore. So I will just not even hear that bill. We'll just set it aside and plan on public testimony next week. So my apologies for those of you that are listening. Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're always so thoughtful. So my second question then, Mr. Davis, would be, if we don't issue the authority for this bonding, when ADA has a project and needs bonding, when they have a project and they need bonding, they have to come to the legislature and explain what the project would be as to why they're looking for bonding. Is that correct?
Representative Stutz, the chair. That is correct if it meets a certain limit, if I could quickly explain. If the bonds are GEO bonds by ADA are less than $25 million, then ADA can issue them by themselves. Also, ADA can issue revenue bonds, which are not putting up the credit of ADA without legislative approval. So this is a very narrow exception of general obligation bonds by ADA in excess of $25 million.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and Representative Mina has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I have two questions. The first question is to Mr. Davis. I'm curious if ADA has pursued this language just in a separate bill throughout this legislature, or perhaps as a committee bill?
Representative Mina, through the chair, I do not think we have presented this matter until very recently, which the chair acknowledged in his comments.
Thank you. May I ask a second question?
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is through the chair to Ms. Clemens, or perhaps to Mr. O'Leary. Is there a timeline or urgency for the passage of this bill? And what would happen if this bill were to not pass through the legislature this year?
Through the chair, Representative Mina, absolutely there's an urgency from our perspective to passing House Bill 122 this year and how it relates to the construction timeline of the Seward Passenger Dock. So currently we are planning to begin construction in fall of 2025 with the completed dock ready for the 2026 passenger season. However, that is highly contingent on the approval of the bond authorization this session.
Thank you. May I ask one more follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair to Mr. Davis, is there any urgency for this amendment, and what would happen if this amendment were to not go through?
Representative Mina, through the chair, I don't think there's urgency in the sense of the railroad. The railroad's got a particular project that it's going forward with, and right now we have projects we're in discussions with. But so we would like to obviously have that authority, and we thought that it was appropriate because we're a state corporation like the railroad, but we don't have a particular project with a timeline like the railroad.
Thank you.
Representative Vance.
Thank you, through the chair, to Mr. Davis. If these, with this bonding approval, these projects start being implemented, is there revenue that will be gained by the state of Alaska through these projects?
Representative Vance, through the chair, yes. If these were on state mining claims, and most of them are, then there will be revenues to the state.
That's all I need to know. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Stutz.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. To follow up on Representative Vance's question, how do you know there'll be revenue to the state when you don't have any projects lined up?
Oh, Representative Stutz, to the chair, I was responding that if the projects are financed with these bonds, bonds are one of the last things you do in a project. So once you get toward bonding, then the particular mine would be closed to operation. And once it operates on state claims, then it pays revenues to the state.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your indulgence. But currently, you have no projects lined up that would be utilizing these bonding dollars. Is that correct?
Representative to the chair, we are in discussions with companies that would like to have this type of buying authority.
But
I want to say they're discussions, and I think they're going to come to fruition. But they're not projects of the type the railroad has, where they have already laid out detailed plan for the particular dock at Seward.
Hello.
Thank you. You can read my mind. So you have no projects lined up that would utilize these dollars.
This is to the chair. I think we do have projects that are, in my view, lined up, because it's a matter of syntax, so I don't want to disagree with you. But I think we are in discussions with companies, yes, and we would hope to be able to start projects, you know, within a reasonable period of time. But they are not projects that are to the level of planning that you see by the railroad.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. This is to Ada, Mr. Chairman. Recently, I'm not sure if it's recent or not, Ada was designated as a state energy finance institution through the Department of Energy. Does that make funds available through the Department of Energy to help with these projects? And if so, how would this bond play into that interaction?
Mr. Casey, the chair, you are correct. ADA has been designated as a state energy finance institution by the U.S. Department of Energy. And in that, with that program under Title 17, there are both guarantees, loans, and credit backstops to projects that would be used with the bonding that would be authorized by this amendment.
To follow up?
So to clarify, and is that substantial dollars? Is it a match? Can you kind of help me understand how? I know you said loans, grants, a couple of other things, but can you tell me what kind of dollars we're talking about if we pass this and this is actually implemented? Are we're talking matching dollars or 10 times? I know the Department of Energy is very big on doing stuff right now.
Representative McKinsey, the chair, I would say that they can be substantial, depending on the project. We have been in extensive discussions. We're one of the first development authorities in the United States to be designated as what's called a CEFI. There's always in federal government acronyms. And we're hopeful that there are substantial amounts of money in the infrastructure bill that you've read about. And we think we can qualify for those funds, and they would be in the millions of dollars.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. So, one second, whoever's in Randy Ruaro's war room there, your hand was gone up or down a couple times, so maybe you had a question or a comment on, I think, probably Representative Stute's question.
Yeah, thank you very much. This is Jeff San Juan. I'm the program manager for ADA, and I just wanted to kind of emphasize some of the pieces that from gathering investments into critical mineral resources in Alaska. So as Mark was mentioning, Mr. Davis was mentioning regarding the CEPI program, it's an additional tool that allows ADA to be able to draw investment from other parts of private entities. And so an example for this is, as infrastructure is being developed or being looked at, other companies are starting to invest into understanding the mineral potential in the state of Alaska. So millions of dollars are pouring in from other private entities outside of the federal government that allows the state to capitalize on outside investment. So I think having something like this for a tool for ADA allows other private companies to have security to know that, you know, the state is backing the investment and understands the critical resources needed to be uncovered. I just wanted to add that. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the Chair, if I may just comment on the amendment on hand. No, I don't disagree with I still need to have some time to think about what this amendment does. And this is a little bit similar to my feelings about the Second Amendment on the Port McKenzie Rail Extension. I think the underlying bill at hand is solid. I think the Alaska Railroad Corporation has a very specific project with funding that is lined up that has an urgency and timeline in order for the legislature to pass it so they can start construction. And so I do worry about other amendments that might muddy up that process. And so I will be opposing this amendment, but I think this amendment and the Port McKenzie one would be good to go through the legislative process as bills.
Okay. Any further discussion at 3 minutes before the time period? I'd like to check in with Representative Sumner and see if he can hear us now.
I can hear you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Sorry, technical difficulties.
It turns out I
hear you guys. Thank you.
It turns out you can vote on amendments. You just can't vote on the bill because you have to be able to sign the bill. So you're more than welcome to chime in. So who had the objection on this amendment? Representative Stutes, do you maintain your objection?
I do.
Okay. Would you please call the roll on amendment number 4?
Representative Stutes?
No.
Representative Mina?
No.
Representative Sumner?
Yes.
Representative C. Johnson?
Yes.
Representative McKay?
Yes.
Representative Vance?
Yes.
Chair McCabe?
Yes.
So that is 5 yeas, 2 nays.
Okay, thank you. And right now we will take a brief at ease. Okay, so we're back on the record. We got about 5 minutes left. I think what we're going to do, Ada told me that there's another place for this Fourth Amendment or the Fifth Amendment that we have. So I think that we will dispense with that instead of doing another conceptual amendment. We're out of time. The railroad needs this money. So I'm sort of making a decision on the fly here, but I think I'd like to move the underlying bill and move it from committee if we can. So
can I object?
You can absolutely object.
Object.
There's been no motion made.
Yeah, we have to motion. No. We have to move it first. But you can object when time comes. All right. One of the things we quickly need to do is public testimony on this bill. I know that it's going to get public testimony in finance, but we noticed public testimony. So with that, I'm going to open public testimony on HB 122. Is there anybody online for this? Where is?
Wasn't it at the bottom, the green one?
Yeah, no, it's, Nope, so there's nobody online. Anybody in the room want to testify on HB 122? Nope. Okay, we will close public testimony. And can I get a motion, Madam Vice Chair?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 122, Work Order 33-LS0623-A, as amended from committee with individual recommendations, attached and forthcoming fiscal notes, and authority for legislative legal services to make technical and conforming changes.
Object.
Okay, there has been an objection. So is there any discussion, or do you just want to vote?
Let's just vote.
Okay. Please call the roll.
Representative Vance?
Yes.
Representative Stoops?
Yes.
Representative Mina?
No.
Representative Sumner?
Yes. I don't know if I can vote, though.
Oh, no.
Can't vote on the bill.
Representative C. Johnson?
Yes.
Representative McKay?
Yes.
Chair McKay?
Yes.
That's five yeas, one nay.
Okay. With that, with five nays and or five yeas and one nay, House Bill 122 moves from committee, and I authorize Ledge Legal to make any conforming changes with attached fiscal notes and forthcoming fiscal notes, and I authorize Ledge Legal to make any conforming changes that they would need to out of our committee. So our next meeting will be Tuesday, March 19th, when we'll have a joint Senate-House joint meeting to hear from the DOT with a presentation titled Innovations in Autonomous and Uncrewed Systems. We will have a visit from Aurora, the state's robot dog. The meeting will begin at 1:30 in this room, and we're going to clear out the chairs and all the desks, and we're going to let the little robot dog run around. So seeing it, no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect that the time is 3:06 p.m., and please stick around and sign the bill. Thank you.